Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on the Quirky Catnips podcast, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted, which we will do until the entire audiobook has been broadcasted. We invite all you kitties to kick back now, relax, and enjoy Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park.
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
A directive from Gertrude Fletcher, head of the Naval Utah Department of Motor Vehicles. Part 19.
Delphina Fletcher played a starring role in both my death and Blue McKenna's. Yes, Delphina was an obtuse character, but like me, she never betrayed anyone. It was Delphina who was betrayed. First, by a crime syndicate who bankrupted her family and sullied her maiden heritage. Then, by those members of said heritage who didn't put forth any effort to find out what happened to Delphina, choosing instead to barter in rumor and speculation. Delphina lived a life of secrecy to protect those she loved. So did I. That's why I took my work for the FBI with me to the grave. I never deceived my husband Boyd. I simply withheld certain details concerning my past. To have done otherwise would have placed Boyd in jeopardy, especially given his obsession with mob-related activities that once took place at Juniper Hollow. Although I no longer worked for those people, I was keenly aware of how dangerous they are. Likewise, I did not disclose my breast cancer diagnosis with Boyd. He would have pressured me to seek treatment that would have been painful, humiliating, and possibly a waste of time and money. That certainly was the case when my mother battled the disease, which she lost along with her hair and body mass. I'm thin enough. I didn't need chemo treatments whittling me down. While I didn't share Boyd's passion for snooping around Juniper Hollow, I was interested in his stories about Delphina. Boyd's telling of a visit from a frightening figure in the days following Delphina's disappearance intrigued me, primarily because it seemed to confirm some strange images I'd seen more than once while driving over the bridge at Juniper Hollow. When the pain from the cancer was becoming too much to bear, I ended it, without help or fuss from anyone. Unless you count Delphina. She was there, all right. A wavering white image beckoning me on the bridge. I think we were both surprised when I gunned my vehicle and headed straight towards her at full speed. The impact was enough to knock my lights out, but unfortunately, it didn't result in an investigation leading to the body of Delphina. It's a pity her fate now rests in the paws of that temperamental cat, Skitters. Next!
In case you haven't noticed, you've been ghosted.
Chapter 19. Skitters the Cat.
I'd like to kill Blue McKenna. No one knows how to foul up a party quite like her. Everyone agreed the big gay concert in Central Park was a rectal-rific success. Scotty Sphincter looked like he finally had a pulse again. Everyone showed up at Legacy Grove for the after-party, including the entire entourage for the rectal surgeons, plus Jasper Stratton and his posse of Sweathouse Commandos. Taj made waffles for the family, surrendering the kitchen when the troops started arriving en masse. I don't understand how anyone could have eaten anything following that phantasmal pesticide Blue sprayed all across the room. She was trying to get everyone's attention. I'm the only one who noticed. I retreated to the back of the couch, only to be chased outside by Blue's insidiously detestable green fumes. On the porch, I gulped in the fresh air, trying to erase that atrocious odor. Cats may lick their own butts, but we don't eat waffles that smell like they've been marinated in baby turds. Danica, Taj's fake squeeze, didn't seem to mind, gulping down a massive plate of food. Danica had to be home by midnight or she'd turn into a pumpkin, so she was eating quickly. My twin handlers were falling asleep in their chairs and were subsequently shuffled off to Gecko's Gulch by a baby tender. I stayed at Legacy Grove with Randall and Moon while the after-concert drinking commenced in earnest. Brandon swiped a bottle of Jack Daniels and disappeared to Scotty's practice shed with Taj. They were back to being dumb and dumber. I tagged along after them, happy to be away from that blast of putrid steam Blue released in the house. Now that the concert was over, their new focus was on Eleanor Snodgrass, a Maine Coon kitten preening her fur at an overpriced cattery in Las Vegas. Brandon seemed relieved things were back to normal with Taj. It had been a tense summer between those two. In an act of supreme generosity, Brandon told Taj he could name his new kitty. Taj came up with Eleanor Snodgrass, thinking he'd burn Brandon with this supremely stodgy name. Personally, I like the name Eleanor, even though it sounds like it ought to be attached to one of those antique dolls with the weird, glassy eyes dressed in vintage clothing. The twins used to have some. I've worn a few of those dresses. They looked way less fringe-core on me than those zombie dolls, that's for sure. Taj might have been feeling better, but I was deeply disappointed Brandon didn't do the socially responsible thing and adopt a rescue. Instead, he hit his dad up for an outrageous amount of cat cash, knowing that he had Scotty by the teabags. Most quality felines originally come from the streets, Miss Kitty and I, to cite a few notable examples. On the upside, Eleanor Snodgrass is a gorgeous breed cloaked in the most lickable fur. I have an open relationship with Miss Kitty, not like the polygamist arrangement proposed by Miss Kitty's sister Harriet, who lived by the adage, one cat leads to another. Eventually, Harriet's handler moved them out of Naval. I miss Harriet's fiery orange fur and personality to match, though not the headaches of dealing with a girlfriend who wants to canoodle every cat in sight. I agreed to this side hustles are okay rule with Miss Kitty just to show I'm mature enough to handle it. Miss Kitty is stuck on Granite Ridge most of the time, so until Cupcake came along, all this was just in theory. Now that it might really be happening, I'll have Eleanor Snodgrass as a backup whenever Brandon is visiting. As for Cupcake, the matted, mangy dog of Juniper Hollow, he ought to be afraid. Very afraid. Have you ever seen the size of a full-grown Maine Coon? Christ, they're as big as a wallaby. Brandon better hope Eleanor Snodgrass likes to poop outside. Otherwise, he'll need a lot more than that dainty shovel that comes with the litter box. On the subject of purging the poop from one's life, if Blue would pull her head out of her ghostly ass for a freaking second, maybe we would clear the air. The way I understand it is, Blue can't leave until Boyd Fletcher's grandmother gets her day of reckoning. This means we have to flesh out the old stinker. Success will hinge on Blue, which means we're probably all screwed. Dealing with Blue on any level of existence is a nightmare come true. A fact she underscored by bringing hell earthside. There was another woman in the mix too. Gertrude Fletcher. She was small, even shorter than Blue. She stood on the sidelines watching Blue make some very bad decisions regarding the grub-slinging ghost trapped in the piling. I don't know if Blue politely knocked on the pillar encasing Delphina or if she taunted her out of her tomb. Either way, the end result was that Blue unleashed a fire-breathing gargoyle who looked like she'd been through a few swirls in the garbage disposal. The smell Delphina kicked up was even worse. Good God Almighty, if there is one. Surely no celestial being would have created something as monstrous as Boyd's grandmother. Cupcake, the overpriced potty patter, made sure the situation went completely off the rails. The little ankle biter got left behind when his handler, Kelly, bottomed out on drugs. Miss Kitty said Cupcake was sad. Why? Kelly is little more than a double D ditz, dressed like she just walked out of a Mary Kay cosmetics convention. Perhaps the failure to fire the synapses in the cerebrum is the thing Cupcake and Kelly have in common. Cupcake was responsible for what happened next. Unable to control his compulsive barking, the ogre under the bridge chimed in with the chorus of ear-splitting sounds. Great shades of Satan! I've never heard such a squall. Delphina sounded like a cat in heat who just had their butt rubbed with turpentine. I thought my eardrums would rupture. Cupcake, now completely insane in the membrane, started whizzing uncontrollably. Every time the little yapper turned around, he sent out a stream of pee, hitting everyone within range. Backing out of the splash zone, I held my ground until Boyd figured out his grandmother had become a jack-in-the-box entombed in the bridge piling at Juniper Hollow. Boyd could see Delphina. I could tell by the way he just stood there gawking while everyone else flipped out. One of the twins was crying, nursing a scraped knee. Yeah, I made that happen, but it was a hell of a lot nicer than saddling my little handler with PTSD. In Cupcake's case, PTSD means pissed, as in, I've pissed on everyone within range. Cats don't normally like baths, but I'm half tempted to take a swim in the lake at Juniper Hollow just to cleanse any potential overspray from my luxurious coat. Then I remembered the polygamists used that lake to discard the droolers, who were born a few chromosomes shy of intellect due to the constant inbreeding in Zion Flats.
Hang tight, kitties. We'll be back in a scratch. Pack your bags, kitties. It's time to take a trip to quirky cannabis country. Find out what happens when a writer turns to reality TV as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. Reefer Madness Ensues in Quirky Cannabis Country by Adele Park. Get Quirky Cannabis Country today on Audible.com, Overdrive, and BookBeat.
Ready for the biggest cat celebration in the world? Come to the CFA International Cat Show and Expo in Cleveland, Ohio on October 12th and 13th. The Expo is the world's grandest cat celebration, seamlessly blending pedigree cat exhibitions with feline welfare and rescue initiatives. It captivates over 10,000 feline enthusiasts each year, celebrating all cats, whether rescue or pedigreed, in a shared spirit of love and unity. Dive into cat-themed activations and enlightening educational sessions. Marvel at 1,000 non-pedigree and pedigreed cats, adoptable felines, and explore over 100 cat-themed vendors. It's an event dedicated to honoring our beloved felines and their admirers. And guess what feline influencers are coming to meet and greet? YouTube cat video sensation Aaron's Animals, as well as Nathan the Cat Lady, Lambo Leisha, Chupi, and many, many more. Gather your cat crew and do whatever it takes to head to the CFA Cat Expo. It's a whisker-wiggling, tail-twirling extravaganza you won't want to miss. Get your tickets at cfacatexpo.com. That's cfacatexpo.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Moon hustled both of the twins into her SUV, then rejoined Boyd under the bridge. He was just standing there, sadly staring at the place where his entombed grandmother screeched and stormed. I'm not sure if he could hear her, but there was no mistaking the angry vibration coming out of that pillar. Blue, clearly scared by this woman, hung around the sidelines like a football player hoping to avoid a concussion by not joining in the fracas. She had to be there, of course, because Moon wasn't going to act on her behalf otherwise. It took a second for Moon to see her dearly departed twin. After registering that this green skunk meat was her sister, Moon actually moved toward the noxious fumes, arms outstretched. I felt kind of bad for her. Moon, that is. Blue can screw herself into the next lifetime as far as I'm concerned. Whatever weird kind of embrace Moon was hoping for failed miserably. Her arms disappeared into the mist. Later, when I overheard Moon discussing this with her husband, Randall, she said the gesture left her arms feeling moist. Ew. Just saying the word moist gives me the willies. Doubly so when considering the source of said moisture. Jeez, Blue is such a sewer weasel. Scotty Sphincter, taking advantage of his newfound bromance with Jasper Stratton, didn't have much trouble negotiating the opening of the pillar, especially since Boyd offered to pay for the repairs. The operation required a little delicacy, not because Delfina was any kind of exotic flower, but because she has the power to set off a nuclear stink bomb. These dumbasses who walk on two legs still couldn't hear her, but there's no mistaking the tremor. The whole damn bridge was practically quivering. Opening Delfina's tomb was just a little trickier than originally anticipated. In order to protect the integrity of the bridge, a temporary piling had to be seated underneath. It took 2 days to find a company out of St. George that had the right equipment, then another day to shore up the bridge. Opening the seam just enough to shine a flashlight inside was like releasing a pressure valve of poisonous fumes. A wave of the most odious air blew out, nearly knocking the structural engineer off his feet. They let Boyd do the honors. She was in there all right. Nothing but bones dressed in a tattered white nightgown. After the crime scene people did their thing, they allowed Boyd to carry her out. Cradling the bundle of bones like a sleeping child, Boyd made an unsteady climb up the embankment. All the humans stopped talking and just stared. It was the saddest thing ever. Miss Kitty was unconsolable. Cupcake went completely off the reservation, barking and whining like a little bitch. I bounced between the two of them, attempting to comfort Miss Kitty while trying to shut down the claptrap attached to Cupcake's snout. I failed in both areas. Boyd, meanwhile, finished his mournful slog to the coroner's van, gently placing Delfina on the gurney for transport to Naval. People don't consider cats to be eavesdroppers, and technically we aren't. Not so in the case of Delfina Fletcher. I wanted to know what this poltergeist from the stench trench was all about. And, in a rare moment of agreement, Blue did too. Though silent up until this point, when questioned, Gertrude relayed a fountain of interesting data which only Blue and the animals could hear. Was Delfina the angel Boyd made her out to be? Not unless the patron saint of bathtub gin counts. Delfina didn't run the distillery in the catacombs at Juniper Hollow. She just did what it took to keep her family members out of the clink. Delfina's role was to design places to hide people, money, and booze, and serve as a lookout when needed. What she didn't do is run off with a mob the night she was interrogated along with Boyd's boozing father. Only one person came out alive from that deal, and it wasn't the right one. What I was confused about was how the deceased director of the Department of Motor Vehicles factored into all this. Blue, though none too bright, wondered the same thing. Aside from being married to Boyd, Gertrude Fletcher didn't seem to have a clear motive. Demanding answers, Blue threatened some kind of action which didn't make any sense to me. What mattered was Gertrude's reaction. A look between defeat and resignation. You're not going to believe this, but Gertrude really had a thing for old Boyd. Not wanting to rile up a man already steeped in paranoia and suspicion, Gertrude wisely didn't disclose that she'd been moonlighting for the FBI the entire time she worked for the family who owned the Double Deuces Casino in Las Vegas. Sharing this information with Boyd wouldn't do anything except put people in danger. On the subject of dying, Gertrude viewed her vehicular suicide as an act of love. With nothing but time on her hands, Gertrude went into quite graphic detail about how her mother died of cancer. Not wanting to burden Boyd with caring for someone in the end stages of this disease, Gertrude made a quick exit by deliberately slamming into the bridge, hoping to release Delfina in the process. By the time Gertrude was done relaying this story, Blue was leaking oily green tears. "My God, this woman is disgusting. Even her tears are pathetic." The moral of Gertrude's story was this. She did it all for love. I'm not shitting you. This little bureaucrat somehow even convinced me. More importantly, I was firmly in Gertrude's camp that Blue belonged in the afterlife. I didn't quite get Blue's sarcastic remarks about something called the main office. I don't care if she lands on Scotty Sphincter's Uranus, so long as she exits my orbit. Now that Moon had caught a glimpse of the green mushroom soup that her twin had become, perhaps something could finally happen to eradicate this odorous gnat. I listened in on Moon's call to Scotty. She was telling him the thing they saw in the Oasis when they spooked the bejeepers out of the boys was definitely Blue. Well, duh. It doesn't take long for these dilltards to catch on. Moon and Scotty are apparently finished grinding each other's gears now that Randall is back in town and the house is once again filled with the happy sounds of my twin handlers. I was sorry to give Brandon the shaft, but he's already moved on. Somehow, Brandon convinced his dad the struggle is real and he needs Eleanor Snodgrass to serve as an emotional support animal. Quit your snickering. Animals do more to help you pathetic humans than everything in your well-stocked medicine cabinets put together. It's a scientific fact that a furry snuggle or a well-placed bump kiss can lower blood pressure and release a flood of serotonin in the brain. Better still, you can take a crap in the morning because cats don't back up the plumbing like prescription medications. Cupcake is evidently the only animal in the solar system who can't do a simple thing like enable his handler to take a daily dump. Pretty telling that Kelly is a high-ranking commander on the Prescription Pill Express. Whoever brought Cupcake to the funeral for Delfina must have their brains stapled to their butt. Having Cupcake on the scene was like trying to hide a colicky baby from the Nazis. The yapping was maddening. Amid the annoying clatter, Delfina was laid to rest in a spot close to the shore of the little lake with the gazebo at Juniper Hollow. This could have been viewed as a truly generous offer from Jasper Stratton, but I have it on good authority he did it mostly for the publicity. Delfina's tombstone faced east, giving her ghost, if there still was one, a direct view of Boyd's cabin on Granite Ridge. Further enhancing this PR opportunity, Jasper insisted on hosting a reception after the funeral. In his typical clubby style, Jasper put on the spread of my dreams. A battalion of cooks manned a row of grills sizzling with hamburgers and bratwursts. Crowd-sized kettles of potatoes in Dutch ovens roasted in buried coals. Appetizers with spicy meats and cheese snuggled in breading circulated throughout the gathering, carried by women in color-coded uniforms. This being a rather somber event, most of them wore black or light gray. Someone had put pink, loofah-like bows on the top of Cupcake's head. They looked like devil horns crafted from cotton candy. Satan in sarsaparilla. Ashamed by his recent whizzing incident, Cupcake hung around the edges of the crowd, salivating over all the free food. Miss Kitty strutted over to give me an earful about being charitable to Cupcake, given that his handler, Kelly with an I, was in rehab for too many Rush Limbaugh-like evenings. Mightn't I lighten up a little? No, I mightn't not. Cupcake is a bleached Brillo pad who uncontrollably pees on everything in range. I don't have to like this bitch. He's my competition, which means I ought to flatten Cupcake like a day-old pancake. The Bon Voyage party for Blue was held at sunrise the next morning. This was a private event with just the Spinkle family and a few close friends gathering to escort Blue across the bridge. It was a symbolic gesture meant to show Blue it was okay for her to move on. Whatever it takes to get her out of here. I walked right by her side, brushing up against Blue's damp air ankles. I knew it would tick her off, but it served as an exclamation point on how miserable I'd make Blue's existence should she decide not to go. Blue's ex-boyfriend, Kip Nichols, was notably left off the guest list, although I did see his squad car buzzing towards Naval as we left the bridge to head toward Legacy Grove. Cupcake was there at the behest of Miss Kitty. This being an event of monumental importance to anyone who wanted to rid themselves of the always annoying Blue McKenna, Cupcake wisely hung around the perimeter, taking care not to get close to either Blue or me. The proceedings were somber and subdued. I was the only one who could actually see Blue fade into the mist, though everyone sensed it. Scotty and young Rudy didn't start crying until everyone was heading to their cars. Rudy's tears were just a warning signal that he needed food. Speaking of which, there wasn't anything served to properly mark what I viewed as a joyous occasion. Someone had hastily grabbed some pre-packaged stuff from a Garden of Goodness grocery, which meant the entire spread consisted of pre-made chicken wraps and potato salad drowning in mayonnaise. Taj looked disappointed. I hear you, bro. The spread was paltry for sure, especially compared to the day before. Of course, no one cared but us two, which is why later that morning, Taj fried up some sausage for a spicy goulash. It gave me a raging case of heartburn, but at least I didn't go to bed hungry. At this point, you may be wondering if this story has a happy ending. The answer is no, at least as far as me and Cupcake are concerned. And Blue McKenna can rot in hell or wherever it is she ended up. You're probably accustomed to hearing tales that conclude with everyone having a big, mushy love fest. Humans tell each other this crap because they can't handle reality. Cats tell it like it is. And right now, you can get over yourself or shove off, pal. I really don't give a tinkle. I've had it with your smug-ass attitude. Just because I don't want to cozy up to a yappy, mashed garbanzo beans of a mutt doesn't make me an evil cat. It makes me a cat. God, can't you get this simple idea into your dull-witted brain? Cupcake is putting the moves on my girl and we will never be friends. Ditto for that swampy mess Blue McKenna. I don't have to indulge morons. Anyone who thinks I should is a moron. Here's something else I'll bet you don't want to hear. Not everyone exited the stage with Elvis. There's always a straggler. I was surprised to discover in this case it was Gertrude Fletcher. She'd made herself scarce once the ghost busting began. The main focus had been on getting the hissing, screeching phantom of Delphina out from under the bridge. Then it was anchors away for Blue McKenna. I'm not sure if anyone even knew about Gertrude besides me, Miss Kitty, and that ding-a-ling Cupcake. Boyd never mentioned her in relation to the haunted bridge. Maybe he didn't even know she was clacking around in her no-nonsense pumps. In all the excitement to finally be rid of Blue, I'd forgotten her myself. The truth came marching in a few weeks before Christmas. Moon McKenna's driver's license had been suspended again. I don't know if she gets a reminder in the mail to renew it or not. Somehow, Deputy Kip Nichols knows when it's past due because he pulled her over for a second time, busting Moon for an outdated license. I happened to be in the SUV, heading into town with Moon to pick up the twins from school. Acting like he was cutting Moon some kind of unbelievable break, Nichols offered to escort us to the DMV to get the issue resolved. The line was longer than a Tolkien novel. What? You think I don't know how to read? How the F do you think I can understand what people are typing on their computers? Give me a little credit, would you? I'm sincerely sick of your faulty, limiting assumptions. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, at the DMV. Given that we'd probably be in this line until a new millennium, I thought I'd wander around a bit, stretch my paws. I'd never been into the bowels of the DMV, but there's a first time for everything. I smelled Gertrude before the confirmed sighting. It's a wonder anyone can work in this office with that oyster soup boiling over in the back room. More of a janitor's closet, really, only it was very neat. Nothing much on the desk except an old manual typewriter and a stack of folders that had gone there to die. I could hear Gertrude snapping away at the keys, no doubt rescinding the life license of some other unsuspecting soul. I was good with that, so long as Blue McKenna stayed dead.
Next!
The End. Thanks for listening to Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park.
Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted is a work of fiction. Copyright 2023. This audiobook was produced at Audio Recording St. George. Mastering by Brenton Wainscott. Script consulting by Debbie Justice. In the cast of Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted, Joan Ducor as Gertrude Fletcher, Jave Patterson as Skitters the Cat, Scott Dawson as Brandon Spinkle, Daniel Pimentel as Taj Wakefield, Sherry Aldred as Blue McKenna, Cleve Asbury as Scotty Sphincter, Adele Park as Moon McKenna, Steve Campbell as Boyd Fletcher, Michael Park as Remy Samisota, Debbie Justice as Delphina Fletcher, and Harrison Taylor as Nolan Hester. Brad Ziffer and Brenton Wainscott served as our studio announcers. The rap, I'm Out, was written and performed by Daniel Pimentel. Beats Gonorrhea was performed by Cleve Asbury. Music mixes by Brenton Wainscott. This performance is dedicated to Michael, who turned out to be a cat person after all. On behalf of our entire crew, here's hoping all your days are navel days. In the mood for a killer audiobook? Quirky Killers by Adele Park is the story of a serial bride who sends her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Too bad the cops don't see the humor in this and arrest this woman who is just trying to make sure everyone gets to meet God. Quirky Killers. Get it today on Audible.com. You'll die laughing.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.